one of the guy, very macho guy, was asking, "Hey, Popo, are you gay?" And then another roommate of mine just said, "He can't be gay. He loves Fei Wang. he loves girls. He loves girls. He loves Fei Wang." So that's such a nice way to cover me, but in the same time, so that's kind of the gayest thing you can do as a teenage guy, right?
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur Folge 8 von Bin ich süß-sauer? Ich bin Song-un und spreche mit queeren asiatischen Menschen in Deutschland über unser Leben, Herausforderungen und Träumen. Im letzten Monat, also August 2020, habe ich eine Sommerpause gemacht. Ich habe mich gut ausgeruht und auch riesig auf eure Mails und Nachrichten gefreut. Falls ihr die Antwort auf eure Mails noch nicht bekommen habt, ich bin noch dabei, passende Worte zu finden, die euren Mails gerecht sind. Bevor wir mit dem Gespräch heute anfangen, möchte ich eine ganz kleine Ankündigung vorausschicken. Am 6.10.2020 werde ich im Rahmen des Cologne Pride eine kleine Talkrunde unter dem Titel Asien hoch 3 moderieren. Wie der Titel schon verrät, werden Anbiet aus Bangladesch, Lilith aus Pakistan und ich aus Südkorea über unsere Erfahrungen mit den Chören-Szenen in Köln austauschen. Es ist eine Präsenzveranstaltung mit einer begrenzten Zahl der Teilnehmenden. Die Talkrunde findet an der Kölner Volkshochschule am Neumarkt und die Runde startet um 18.30 Uhr. Beim Interesse meldet euch also per E-Mail im Voraus bei vhs-gesellschaft@stadt-köln.de. Mehr Infos zur Veranstaltung findet ihr auf der Facebook-Seite sowie Webseite der Lesben- und Schwulenverband Nordrhein-Westfalen. Das Gespräch wird aufgenommen und als eine neue Folge von Bin ich süß-sauer zu hören sein. Und deshalb kommt die Folge 9 nicht wie üblich am 1.10.2020, sondern voraussichtlich am 10.10.2020. Heute haben wir nochmal einen ganz besonderen Gast, der in vieler Hinsicht sich mit den anderen Gästen bisher unterscheidet. Popo kommt aus China und er ist ein Filmemacher, Künstler und frisch gebackener Berliner. Heute werden wir das Gespräch auf Englisch führen und so möchte ich auch dann Menschen ansprechen, die sich mit englischer Sprache wohler fühlen als deutscher Sprache. Hi Popo.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. So I'm proud that I understand what you say. After being in Berlin 3 years and I managed to.
That's good. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners? Who are you and what are you doing? And what are you so into?
Hello, everybody, again, and thanks for Song-un and giving me this chance to talk on this podcast. And my name is Popo Fan, and I know it could be interesting name for a lot of German audience, but it was given by my parents, and they didn't know that I wanted to ever come to Germany. So basically, I grew up in China and being a filmmaker since 2007, after I graduated from Beijing Film Academy. That's where I studied. And I made documentaries on LGBT families in China. Also recently, my most latest films are short movies and featuring queer issues and in a sex positive way. Besides that, I'm also organizer for Beijing Queer Film Festival and sometimes also creating screenings at different places. I moved to Berlin in 2017, actually the end of August. So now it's exactly 3 years anniversary of my time in Berlin. So it's also very exciting to share with you my life here and also back to China.
I'm also excited. And for those who are interested already in Popo's works, there are tons of interviews with him online. And he's one hell of an activist from China. And I thought, actually, I need more than just one or two episodes to cover all his activisms. But today we will focus on Popo's stories of growing up in China and his works he's done, and also his life in Berlin. I hope that this podcast will lead you to more of his works, very stunning works, and also interviews. Just to start off, what brought you to Germany? What was the initial reason to come to Germany?
Before I moved to Berlin, I lived in Beijing, where I lived for 14 years and where I was so tired of. And I hate the city so much. Since 2014, I keep on talking about moving out from Beijing. I didn't, it's always tricky when you want to relocate yourself and you need to get new network and think about what you can do in a new city. At that time, I was thinking of Shanghai because in 2015, I had a lawsuit with the Chinese government, with the censorship department of Chinese authority. At that time, most of my event was banned in Beijing. And someone planned a screening or invited me to do a workshop or lecture, and they got a notice from local police that you have to cancel this event. So as for a filmmaker, you're useless. It's meaningless if you can't do activities in your own city. But Shanghai at the time become more and more a place for artists and filmmaker. Beijing used to be more artistic and culture, but after what I described of the more and more strict censorship from the authority, Beijing lost its charm very much. It was also trending around 2015 and 16 that a lot of people moved to Shanghai or other cities in China from Beijing. And so the original plan was to go to Shanghai, but suddenly a friend just sent me information to apply a residency in Berlin, and the document they require doesn't seem to be very complicated. So I just sent an application. At that time, I was also writing a script about Chinese artist seeking a new home in Berlin. So I got in, and then I said, oh, Berlin, maybe that sounds a good idea. Before I move here, I have been here for many times. So I got a lot of connection and also know the city a little bit. So I feel kind of this is the place I want to be.
So the censorship was one of the initial reasons to move out from Beijing, and you are also tired of the big city of Beijing, and you are familiar with Germany or Berlin specifically?
I was only familiar with Berlin. I've been to other cities in Germany, but Berlin is sort of a place I know a bit.
And it's already 3 years ago, and what happened in the last 3 years in Berlin?
So the first year, I spent a lot of time doing the research for my script. Since the script was partly about the nightlife, so I in my application, I also mentioned that my research place including Frequency 3000, KitKat, Bearcat. I did went to those places to do the research because experiment on nightlife here, but didn't exactly know what would happen at 8 a.m. in a club. I never spent that long time in a club, or I didn't know how people would hang out with each other at the after party. But the research for nightlife is not everything, because the other aim is that I want to interview Asian queer artist who live in Berlin, and so I can get to know their experiments in such a situation and get inspired from their stories. And also I went to a lot of art event and exhibition and opening to get to know people, and also get inspired from the environment, from the atmosphere. So that was mostly what I did in the first year, and I continue to explore more about what can I do. It was quite productive. I shot a short movie based on the research I did. It's called Beer Beer, and it's about experiments of Asian queer person and a German guy for what they did in the early morning. So we shot that in 2018, and I, in the same year, also went back to China to shot another short movie. And this year I also shot another short movie. So if not COVID, I could even shot more. So always make me feel, oh my God, 3 short movies a year is like making a feature film. So it's quite exhausting. And so this year maybe COVID make me slow down a little bit. But the other thing, I haven't stopped also curating. Last year I worked with a space called the Bebug in Berlin, inviting queer Chinese films into the space. So we did 4 screenings and covering different topics of queer issues in the Chinese speaking world. And also did a lot of Q&A, and we end up with a very cute karaoke night to celebrate. So this year I'm going to work with some again. This time we'll concentrate on, we'll focus on Chinese and the Middle Eastern. So it will be cross culture, intercultural experience. And so we pair one Chinese filmmaker with a filmmaker, with another filmmaker with a Middle Eastern background. And so we can see that how much culture we actually share and how much talk we have. We have an echo with each other. So I'm really excited. And besides that, I have also living my life and cooking and meeting people, getting to know new friends and enjoying nature, going swimming. So
you're also having a good time in Germany.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's good. Let's talk about your movie, Beer Beer. I watched the movie yesterday and I really love this atmosphere that you captured. Most of the part is shot in black and white.
Yeah.
And also it has really nice jazz music throughout the movie. So tell me more about the movie. What was your initial idea behind this movie, and what was the moment that, or the scene that you had in mind?
So during my research, one of the very important topic was also about racial issues in the queer life, queer circle in Berlin, especially as an Asian person. And I succeed to do a lot, to get a lot of inspiration from my own experience. You know, a lot of, I don't know, Sungun, do you have any similar experience with me as an Asian person? So sometimes we can't describe it as a racist encounter, or it's just someone want to make a dialogue with you, and they would think that they're pricing you, but in the end make you feel kind of annoyed. For example, there was so much cliche about, oh, you look so young, and in the beginning I was kind of also happy, but after you heard hundreds of times, I was like, can you say something else to me? And also, I even had experiments, strangers come to me just to want to touch my skin. And that person said, oh, I want to feel your skin because it looks so smooth and I want to feel it. And I don't know, that person maybe was high or drunk or whatever. And I kindly let him do that. But after what I feel, oh, how dare he? And how could I? And so I, in the same time, I don't want to just put myself in a situation, in a position as a victim, because we all have our own initiative, and we're not just being discriminated by other people. And also, which make me reflect a lot when I was in China. A lot of my white friend also said, oh, we were also fetishized. We were all, there were people who want to touch my beard because I'm so hairy. So this all make me think a lot. And every time I heard those kind of cliche conversation, I was telling myself, you know what, I'm going to write this into my script. So actually, the script of B2B was totally written based on those kind of encounters I had in Berlin. And so the scene was set in an early morning situation after parties to people met. One of them is Tao from China, and the other one is Sebastian, a German guy. So they met each other and trying to get after party beer. But suddenly, a mattress changed everything. So I won't tell you more, and you had to go to watch it. And actually, there is a platform called Gaga Ulala. So it's a Taiwanese company, so they had licensed my almost all of my movies. So B2B, you can also watch it online. Just search Gaga Ulala, and then you find B2B on it. And if you subscribe, and you will be able to see it. And also, it's also a way to support the Asian LGBT platform and also support me.
I went through your filmography, and the recent works were almost all fictional movies, while the works you've done in China were mostly documentary films.
So, yeah, so I would say come to Berlin maybe also a sort of aesthetic choice. When I was in China, most of the film I did was almost directly for the activism reason. So. Mm-hmm. For example, when I was making Mama Rainbow, I feel, oh, so many of my friends was talking about their coming out to progress seems to be so hard. I want to make a film to show, so they can show to their parents, and which would make the coming out progress easier. It was quite effective to many families. So because in such an environment, very lack of visibility and representation. So I proudly would say my film was played a very important role within the community. But on the other hand, I was tired of myself because with this ideology, you don't necessarily satisfy everything. And a lot of identity-based activities made me feel I didn't have myself, and I was seeking any opportunities to have a way to express myself. So I would say from 2016, my artistic focus started to move from identity-based practice into body-based practice, because I want to feel the film, feel the narrative, feel the cinematic perspective with my body, with myself especially, because art is from the voice in the bottom of your own heart, right? So I would say my early documentaries, I also love them because they're also one kind of voice from my heart. But later on, I got really satisfied more actually working on different other projects. And so like one of my film I finished in 2019, same year with B2B, was called Floss. So that one was about a fetish. A lot of people didn't understand it. So it's about one person has difficult to express himself because he has a fetish on teeth and dental floss. When I showed it in film festival, I have an audience come to me. So could you explain to me what happened? Why he's fascinated by teeth, and what's the relationship of him and his boyfriend? I told them, well, this is first a very personal type of exploration, and secondly, I think you don't necessary to feel the same with me, because for art, everyone has their own way to feel it, their own way to understand it, and I like this kind of complex type of way to make film. And art doesn't necessarily give you an answer, but broad complex layers of questions.
It sounds also a little bit like that you want to more focus on yourself, because documentary movie you made were mostly of your community, the people you were acquainted with, your friends. And with fictional movies, you have the possibility to tell your story, not exactly your story that happened in your life, but story that you want to talk about and people that you want to show to other people, so your characters.
I think it's really also fascinating to talk about what is personal, what is community. When I said I want to express myself and have more personal type of film, but when those film was made, a lot of people told me that, oh, this could be this is a character I can feel. And for example, Bia Bia, and after I showed it, and a lot of people who are also Asian background living not in their own country, and sent me message and told me that they have a similar encounter with me. And even floss, it was such an odd fetish. Another friend also told me, oh, I totally feel the ending. The ending was so so powerful to me, because in the end it was I put it as an open ending. And so Floss, you can also see it from Gaga Ulala. And also another film about transgender characters, even though they are both very personal case, but I with those individual, because community are all built up with individual, and all those individual stories, all those personal stories build up this community and make people feel it. But just I would say I just made all those the style of expression to be more artistic and complex, because they are more personal, but not necessarily be away from the community. I always feel myself very much with the community and in the community, from the community, and also supported by a lot of friends from the community.
Now, moving from China to Berlin, do you think you found your community in Berlin as well?
I totally was so welcomed by the Asian community here, because when I moved here in 2017 in September, so in October it was the Asian Film Festival in Berlin. So I already know the organizer of Coronation before I moved here, so I see it is a very precious opportunity for me to do my research and also build up a network. At that time, so because since we have talked so much about food, and I didn't really miss China very much, but I missed the food there. So for the first few weeks, I feel, oh, I can just also survive from cheese, from bread, and even just within a week, I'm so tired. So, oh, I want something spicy. I want spring onion. I want a lot of ginger. So then I went to Dongxuan Center. So it's a huge Vietnamese market in Lichtenberg in Berlin. And when I got there, I feel, oh my God, I'm in paradise. I feel home. So I bought, I really literally carried three big bags of ingredients from there. And so it would be so weird if I'm in Beijing and tell people, I feel home here in a Vietnamese market, right? But all those similarity of food and culture make me feel, oh, I am the family member of this Asian community. So even though I said I sort of the political identity myself, but not necessarily have the label of queer filmmaker, but then you're in a country that people see you as a ethnic minority, and you are labeled as a Asian person, Asian artist. But in the same time, this community also give you a lot of strength, a lot of support. And I get to know a lot of friends from Korean, from Japan, from Philippines, Indonesia. So at that time, I was also learning German. Mm-hmm. So my best friend in my German school was from Korea, and she's also a sound designer, so she did the sound for my shooting for Bia Bia. Mm. And we always eat together because she eats really very spicy food. So I cooked for her for a few times and always said, more, put more spice. And we go to eat hot pot together, and mm-hmm. sometimes, like two times a week, she said, she joked with me, my blood is half of them are blood, half of them are hot pot. we're the hot pot lines. All those make me feel slowly come stronger and stronger of the Asian community here. Mm. And the other thing made me feel that I have to face my identity, because I had two times already so far very almost violence, racist insult on the street. So mm-hmm. once was in Berlin. Once was in 2018, so there was one person hurt me, and my friend was speaking Chinese in Kudapasator. He just turned back to us and shouted at me, fuck China, I hate China, fuck back. Sorry, the first one 2019, the second one 2020. Just this year, again, in February. So on the U-Bahn, there was one guy called me Corona, and also mm-hmm. spit at me. So at that time, it was even a more hardcore remind to me that even you don't want to mention about your own identity, but there are people reminding you all the time because they see you differently. And and at that time, organizations like Quarantation and also a lot of individuals, a lot of my friends supported me mm-hmm. by helping me to translate my letter to police. Or yeah, at both of those time I reported my case to police, that was super, super useless, honestly. And I was disappointed with them. So like the guy who shouted at me in the U-Bahn, and they told me because it was CCTV in the U-Bahn, they were trying to find the video from the official site, but they told me the video was lost in the end. They didn't find anything. So, but at that time, the community was most supportive to me, mm-hmm. and I have friends calling me, and also organizations gave me help.
Mm-hmm. You were also on TV because you gave an interview about the incident, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was also connected by Quarantation, so they put me in touch with RBB, and we did an interview with. I got a lot of people. Added me, followed me on Instagram or Facebook, and telling me that thanks for speaking out for us. But one phenomenon I noticed that I posted this video on TikTok, because it was all already on Instagram and on the website of RBB and on Facebook. I think, because TikTok seems to be another word, I think it's also important for them to have this awareness. And I was surprisingly got a lot of hate speech on TikTok.
Oh, and, really?
So there were people saying, look, you just literally try to insult me. And there were also people saying, you deserve this because the Chinese government treated the African community so badly. And of course, I also hate Chinese government doing that to the African community. This is totally mm-hmm. wrong of them. But mm-hmm. it's not me taking that responsibility and doing put me into that position. Actually, I'm also doing my what I can do to act against racist mm-hmm. issues. But somehow people can only target you depending on your skin color and nationality, which is horrible. And I also see that in the society in Germany that there were rarely any opportunity for minorities to communicate and understand each other. So I also found there is an Islamic phobia phenomenon within the Chinese or East Asian individuals, and because so they didn't have enough opportunity to understand their culture. So that's why I want to do this film theory in October at BIBAC to promote the communication between minorities.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important. This is also why I started interviewing not only Asian queer people, but also outside of this boundary, because I also realized that we are so busy just talking among us or talking to the majority society, like white German society, while we are just leaving behind our other racialized friends or other citizens in this country. And I think it's very meaningful that that we also talk to each other, not only about each other.
Yeah.
Do you have any theory or any explanations why direction on TikTok was so different from other platforms?
I won't say living in Berlin is a pleasant journey, or I enjoy the city very much, but somehow we are in a very liberal bubble. And because especially if you are also people of color, you're also artist yourself, and very often your friend around you are very open-minded and very supportive to culture. So I always feel, oh, I should break those bubbles. I should be able to see what is happening in different places. One of the strategy is to be on TikTok. I was so open. I feel so eyes opened by using TikTok. And a few days ago, I went to demonstration at Hermann Platz in Berlin at, for the memorial of Hanno gunshot. And because it was 6 months kind of memory for that event, I took the video and post on TikTok. And I got targeted again by a lot of AFD supporter and right-wing people. And but this makes me feel, well, you have to face the fact most of them are German. And they were just posting, oh, so that's why we should have an AFD here. And oh, fuck those people, fuck off. And I think it was such an odd place. And on one side, and I see a lot of creative people on TikTok, that which was true, and a lot of videos are quite interesting. The way as a filmmaker, I was fascinated by the way they do the video. But in the same time, you can see potentially even the younger generation, they are not necessarily really progressive or supporting for cultural diversity, and they're not necessarily understand about multiple culture, and so this is dangerous, and this this remind me that it's not everywhere like a Neukon in a hipster Neukon bar that people are talking about going demonstration to support Egyptian lesbian, or it's not everywhere like a art studio showing their supportive opinion to revolution in Hong Kong. And actually the reality is quite ugly. And I always want to remind friends around me, don't just lock in your own bubble. Even I am definitely too old for TikTok, but I'm still staying on it. Actually, I have more followers than most of my my younger friends. I have more followers than my niece. So I always telling her that, see, I have more followers than you on TikTok because I'm younger than you.
It also hurts you, right? That you receive those kind of comments from random people.
No. So yeah. I don't, honestly, I don't care about those people. They, how come they hurt me? Because they all, they all look so stupid. If you check them profile, and they probably didn't know anything. Sadly, they are the people who are locked in their own bubble, and they don't accept other people just based on other people's skin color and age and nationality. So I feel I just feel sad for them, you know. But on the other hand, as someone who was doing a lot of advocacy in China for queer people, you can imagine how much I used to have this one stalker on my blog back to 10 years ago, and commenting on my blog every day about how much how much he hates me, and anonymously. So I don't know that person's gender or age at all, but I survived not blocking that person at all. So because I was saying, yeah, you don't go ahead. It's kind of my helping me to meditate. I'm not angry because I know you are stupid, and I hope one day you will change. But it's okay if you don't want. I can't help you. So I was already ready before I moved to Germany. So when I faced those encounters, I was not completely shocked, because I know there must be always challenge at a lot of places for you. For example, I think being Asian in Germany is very similar with being queer in China. You are allowed to exist, but you're not seen by the society, and people ignore you. And people discriminate you with not a visible excuse or reason. But certain places like TikTok, and because they can hide themselves, they will just show so much of their real opinion. And I'm always not surprised and ready to fight.
That's awesome. Let's move to another topic. And one thing that really touched my heart was the documentary movie Mama Rainbow. It's a documentary movie that he produced about six mothers and their queer children in China, from Beijing, from Guangzhou, from other cities. And there are members of PFLAG China, which is Parents and Friends of Lesbian and Gay People. So they tell their story about finding out their children's or their child's gender identity or sexual orientation, and the struggle they had, and also the relationship that lasted after their coming out. I also had my coming out to my parents 7 years ago, and it was a huge issue, or it is still an issue for me personally. So I feel especially attached to this movie and to the story and to people who were on the screen. And in some interview, you mentioned that you could learn from other people through your documentary work how to coming out or how to deal with this issue. So have you come out to your parents?
Yeah, I came out to my parents in 2009. You know, I was born in 2000. I wish I was born in 2000. I was born in 1985. So when I was 24 years old, you know, my zodiac, my Chinese zodiac is ox. So yeah. Because usually, usually they would say you will be in big trouble. So 2009 was the year of ox. And I feel, oh, something gonna happen this year. And then at that time, I suddenly, during Chinese New Year, just 2 days after Chinese New Year, then when the year of ox started, so my parents started to have a serious conversation, talking with me about marriage. So, you know, 24 years old, because before 22, before I graduated from university, they were still telling me that, oh, you should concentrate all your study and don't think about dating, and it's okay if you do it after university, blah blah. And then it was already 2 years after university, they were quite madly looking for me to bring a girlfriend and get married and having children soon. And I suddenly told them, have a strong feeling that I should tell them, because if I push it to another year, they will just only get more disappointed. And then we started to have this serious conversation. So they were questioning, when did you realize this? And I told my mom, so do you remember which year when our family just had a TV? So when we just bought a TV, my mom was holding me in her chest. And then I watched TV. There was a very sexy guy on the screen. And it was like a Hong Kong criminal film. And this guy was arrested by the police. And my heart was beating so fast. My mom was like, wow, you remember so clearly. I said, of course, because this was so impressive for me at the time. And my mom was saying, that means that was when you were 3 years old, because that was the year we just had the TV. Mm-hmm. And she also sort of almost recalled which film we were watching back then in 1988. So my childhood was almost along with all those desires on male body. So I've been looking at my classmate or my teachers from kindergarten to primary school, and I started to fall in love with my classmate in high school. And I already come out to some of my classmates when I was in high school, which was quite unusual. Well, back then, it was so hard to get any information about sexuality. And because China only decriminalized homosexuality in 1997, and until 2001, being gay was still a disease. And being transgender is still a disease until now, but being gay was only removed from a mental health problem in 2001. And so I had a very long time to have difficulty to understand myself. So when I came out to my parents, I also told them about all those experiments. Mm-hmm. And as you said, when I was doing all those interviews, also helped me a lot to understand how were parents thinking and how you can communicate with them.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents' first reaction was saying, oh my God, we can't believe he hides such a big secret for so many years. I feel so bad for him. But at the same time, they start to worry, oh, your life will be so difficult. Mm-hmm. And it will be also be difficult for them, because they need to face their family members. They need to, or even neighbors or friends, they might be gossiping us.
Mm-hmm.
We all cried and we all become very emotional. So, you know, it spent a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So my dad suddenly said, oh, are you guys hungry now? Shall we make some dessert so we can eat? Then we started to cook, and it was already midnight, and so we started to eat. This makes me feel, okay, it is a big issue, but somehow it's not the end of the world, because we are still cooking and eat. So after Chinese New Year, I had to go back to Beijing. And we communicate through calling each other. So after a few months of communication, I explained to them why I need to be myself, and they become more peaceful. But they didn't know what I was doing. I only know that I'm a filmmaker, but they didn't know that I'm doing films also about queer issues. Until I had that lawsuit with Chinese government. Actually, at that time, we had a communication. I realized they already knew what I'm doing then, but I didn't. We didn't even talk about when they started to realize this and how did they know about it. Mm-hmm. So only my mom told me, okay, you had that lawsuit with the government. I said, how did you know about that? My mom just said, your sister told me. So it's also opened another secret that my sister actually knew what I'm doing, because she's more active on internet. Because all what I did was not very available on TV or newspaper, but internet is the only media could cover my activity. Mm-hmm. And so my sister had told them about what I'm doing. So at that time, my mom was really worried because I've been doing all those activities but not making money. So she, when I was getting on the bus to the train station to Beijing, she was still saying, "Are you sure you have enough money? I hope you are not starving yourself." So I really appreciate them that even then, there would not be other people like mother, people like parents to support the children by being very active for the organization. But they really showed that they love me and they care about what I'm doing by those small behavior.
Mm. That's very touching and also makes me happy to hear that you found such great emotional support from your parents, because I also had my own coming out on the Chinese New Year 2013. There is something to Chinese New Year because it's very nice
for family.
Stressful,
very family driven,
spending the whole time with your parents, and then of course you're talking about marriage or things like that. And this pressure is enormous. And I plan to come out to my parents anyway, but I discussed it with my sister, and I discussed with her like I'm going to come out to my parents shortly before I move back to Germany. I was already living in Germany, but I was visiting my parents for the Chinese New Year. But I couldn't just stand this atmosphere of I don't know what was on the Chinese New Year. So I came out to my parents, and it was the beginning of a long horror story.
Oh God!
So I'm all the more happy that your parents were there for you, and also your father. How lovely he is! Like to offer you and your mom to cook together after the midnight. I think it's a scene that I love to see on the screen too. Because there are just also many Asian quirkies about coming out gone wrong. Parents don't show any support. So it's actually, I think it's almost the first time that I hear from Asian queer person that whose coming out went quite well in the first place. And I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. So I think one of the details I would like to mention that when I just came out, my dad has a big question. So you said you're gay. Why we didn't know any other gay people in our village and neighborhood? And so I just told my dad, you know, I already know that I have to study hard. I have to go to other cities so I can be, I will be able to enjoy my own freedom. But unfortunately, a lot of people will just stay in this small place, and most of them will get into the heterosexual marriage, which bring them a lot of pressure on family and having children. So my dad started to gossip one of our neighbors. So he has a problem with his wife all the time. He also acting kind of a sissy, and their children, they didn't have children for many years. They adopted, and could he be gay? And then also, wow, that sounds like very gay. I didn't realize because I didn't live in my with them for a very long time. So some neighbors I didn't know. And also, there is another friend of mine. He always go to Beth's house. Could that also sound, does that also sound
sounds very gay? Strong indication that.
So I didn't know, dad, you have so many interesting friends. But then I told my dad, so dad, do you want me to live in a life like them? And my dad said, no, I don't want to. They're not a great role model for you. You should not live like them. But I think at that time, they immediately already know that what kind of life I should not be living in. But some other ways, it took them really long time for them to accept what kind of life I am achieving. Even now, they were still kind of trying to tell me, oh, because I've been also been single for a really long time. And, so, and I'm kind of against the ideology that you have to be in a couple to achieve a certain happiness. I see myself not necessarily be with someone, but that would do, that would be worried. They would suggest me, oh, you should at least live with someone. Or, you know, there is even for me shooting documentary about parents, and a lot of them are very much accepting, very supportive to their children, but somehow they were still in this family ideology that no matter male or female partner, you have to have partners so you can be happy. And you have to have your children. So somehow I heard a lot of LGBT people got family pressure that since their parents heard you can also have the children from surrogacy agency, and so they also get suggested by their parents, you should find a way to have a children, no matter legal or even illegal. But somehow it's not everybody's dream, you know. It's a lot of people, they don't want to have children at all. But it's just an issue of how society can help us, people who doesn't have a typical family, to live in a good life when we get old.
The first moment that you realized that you're attracted to a man was actually as you watched a movie. Are there movies or stars that affected you as a growing up queer person in China at that time?
There is a very interesting TV series that influenced me a lot about sexuality. I don't know if have you heard the legendary of White Snake. It's about a white snake become a human and then fall in love with a person, and she and the green snake together had a living with a guy, but somehow in the TV was played by a woman. So at that time, we were all talking about what kind of relationship they are. Because, you know, it's also a quote from traditional Chinese opera, men playing female character or a woman performers play male character. So at that time we were all saying, so the white snake, is white snake a lesbian? Is that a same-sex relationship? And also all the music from that TV series was so beautiful, and it was very campy. And so that was such an important until now, when some Chinese media interview me which queer films or TV you would recommend to the younger generation, I would say I would recommend 新白娘子传奇. This is a Chinese title for the TV theory. And then some of them would react so surprised, wow, yeah, that makes sense, it's kind of very queer, but we didn't realize it when we were young. So now it's fascinating to queer read all those richness of cultures phenomenon in our own society. So this is what I have been looking a lot into that. But also not necessarily queer topic, but I was big fan of the Hong Kong pop star Fei Wang. She was not outspoken as Leslie Cheung to doing advocacy for the queer community, but she has a very unique style. And so and when I was watching Chungking Express, and because she has such a short hair, and this was so different with all the female star, and also her voice was very special and very recognizable. So at that time, I know a lot of Chinese gay men were fan of her. And even when I was in high school, and I know another boy was also a fan of Fei Wang. And it's kind of almost a signal that, oh, that guy must be also a member, or also must be also gay. So it was almost a cold between us. But somehow, at that time also, maybe we want to cover ourselves. You know, it's a certain danger for you to come out during high school. So that would, in our dormitory, it was quite misogynist, and so you have to very macho, you had to be acting very kind of macho. So we had discussion, one of a guy, very macho guy, was asking, hey Popo, are you gay? And then another roommate of mine just said, he can't be gay, he loves Fei Wang. he loves Fei Wang. So that's such a nice way to cover me, but in the same time, so that's kind of the gayest thing you can do as a teenage guy, right? So there's so many different layers in the pop culture. Actually, the editor, she's a very good friend of mine. And so last time when she had her birthday, I ordered a Fei Wang CD for her. Because she told me that was her teenage crush. She looks so handsome in Chungking Express with that short hair looking. And I literally bought that CD when she had very short hair. So this made me realize, okay, Fei Wang didn't only inspire gay men, but also queer women and lesbian in our generation. It was just magic.
That's crazy, actually. I mean, who do we otherwise share as our like stars, gay and lesbian people? Because I also totally adore Fei Wang. And I love this sequence where she just listens to the music, Mamas and Papas, California Dreaming, and Tony Leung enters the store, but she doesn't care. She's just like listening to the music and just dancing herself. And I just love this sequence. And she just answers also questions just, I don't know, so weirdly, but so funny. Yeah, and she looks gorgeous. I mean, yeah.
One thing, sadly, that she was in the new propaganda Chinese movie, and she sent a very propaganda law. This broke my heart. So I don't want to tell that. I don't want to tell Grace about her latest Korean. It was kind of sad, because I think now Hong Kong pop culture was so dominated by mainland China, and also the Chinese propaganda department, the propaganda minister also controlled a lot of culture. Sadly.
Now, well, COVID-19 changed a lot of things. You're not going to able to work in China or in the USA this year in a very short time. So what are you up to right now in the moment?
So I have two short scripts I'm developing, and if everything okay, I still want to shoot next year. And also I'm writing a feature script, which still a long way to go. But in the same time, I'm interested to extend my artistic perspective by doing some video art installation. I'm always interested with multiple ways to showcase my work. And I also recently started to work for a porn company based in Spain. I just shot a porn for them. It's kind of a sci-fi fetish. And of our relationship with a device and machine. So this year, it will be released. Another side of my career. So I think working on those projects are also a big pleasure, because they are really very careful about ethical issues. I learned a lot from the company and also from the shooting itself. And my cast and crews are all very great. And in the script itself, I also put some anti-racist ideology into it. And so I already have another idea, another script for them, also featuring issues of racist and food and polyamory, bisexual topics. So I can only promise you more if you continue to be interested with my work.
If you want, you can also come again as a guest. The last question is that I love to ask to people who make movie, or yeah, people who create something. If you would make a movie about yourself, about your life, which scene would be definitely a part of it?
There is a scene that one person was staring at a bookshelf himself in a very noisy party. Because I want to feature this moment, the self-intimacy in a big crowd. I think that could kind of represent very much my personality. So, but then this film could open to a lot of possibilities. Oh, would there be any people try to talk to him after seeing his back? And what kind of encounter would that be? And what kind of book is he staring at in such a noisy house party? And also now hasn't been to any house party for such a long time. Also even make me feel strange to imagine that. But that was the thing I definitely want to put in if one day I want to make a film about myself. And I already imagine that cinematically it will be a long shot from the back of this protagonist. And the acting would be, even you don't see his face, but you can feel him, what he was thinking, what in his mind, and what's happening in that universe, and with a lot of layers.
It's very intriguing scene. As you said, it could just develop into any other story, any possible story. And it's, yeah, like opening a book or opening many books. Yeah. Cool. So thank you for being here and thank you for talking with me today. Love to talk to you. And let's keep in touch.
Thank you, Song Yun.
Yeah. And I hope we can see in person at sometime very soon.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me this chance and see you next time.
I thank you that you are here.